Welcome, welcome friends to ArtCast. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, bringing you a world of information, architectural knowledge, and in-depth concepts, all kinds of great stuff. That's what we do here on ArtCast because we are about helping you to stay in tune and up to date. Did you know WYSI 3.0 shipped with Visual Studio 2005 and is now out there allowing you to get your hands on the latest WS security stuff? And maybe you're wondering, well, you know, what kind of patterns can I implement? Well, my good friends and former teammates from Patterns and Practices have done a wonderful job with a guide called Web Services Security Patterns. So I recently did a Patterns and Practices live webcast with them, and we're going to listen to that now. So let's give it up for Patterns and Practices.
All right, thanks very much, and welcome. Welcome to Patterns and Practices Live. I'm Ron Jacobs, host of the Channel 9 show ArtCast, and I'm sitting in here today helping out with Patterns and Practices Live, where we have traffic and weather together at the top of the hour. With 24 straight days of rain here in Redmond, can you believe it? We are going for a new record. But in traffic, you can expect high message volume with possible congestion, delays, drop packets, and duplicate messages. And the forecast calls for increasing threats of eavesdropping, tampering, and it's a cold one out there. So get your WS security on. And speaking of which, let me introduce my guest today. Don Smith. Don is a product manager in the Microsoft Patterns and Practices team. Welcome, Don, to Patterns and Practices Live.
Thanks, Ron. It's good to be here. Thanks.
All right. And also, we're joined by Mark Fussell. Did I say that right?
You said that right.
Yes. Oh, okay. Mark's the program manager for WYSI and the security PM on the Indigo team. Mark, welcome to Patterns and Practices Live.
Thanks, Ron. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to this.
All right. And also in studio, Dwayne Taylor. Dwayne is an RDA product manager and application development security champion.
Ooh.
Dwayne, welcome to Patterns and Practices Live.
Thanks, Ron.
All right. Well, we are going to be talking today about securing web services with X509 certificates. And I know everybody's just dying to hear all about this topic because we're going to be very practical today, right?
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
So we're, you know, not any weird theory stuff. This is all about getting down to the nuts and bolts because we are Patterns and Practices is all about helping people get practical and build stuff that they have to build. So there's the agenda. We're going to just dive right on in. So, Don, let me begin with you.
All right.
So you've been thinking about the web server security space. That's kind of your role in Patterns and Practices. What are you thinking about doing there?
Well, what we've just done is released the, what we're calling the Web Service Security Guide, and the long name you can see on the slide here is the Web Service Security Scenarios, Patterns, and Implementation Guidance. And really what this is, it's a package of a bunch of different things. Here's a couple of bullets here on it. It targets developers and architects. It has a number of different things. Ron mentioned when we opened up that this is a real pragmatic kind of thing. This isn't just talking about WS security specifications and even really specific features of WYSI as it is as much focusing on the types of solutions you're trying to build and trying to map that to certain requirements and then, of course, certain features inside WYSI. So what this guide does is it gives you a number of different ways to figure out whether you should be using X509, whether you should be using Kerberos, depending on what you should be doing, you can find that in this guide. So what I can do is switch over real quick just to show you. I'm not going to spend any time forcing you to read a PDF document, but what this is the PDF document we released last month, and you can download this PDF from MSDN. There's a link in the deck, and you can also view the web pages. So all of these pages are published on MSDN if you want to read it online. But what you can see here is there's a certain flow to the way that this PDF is built. And there's also a number of links directly to the web pages from the WYSI documentation. So we worked really closely with Mark and his team.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. That's what I love about this so much is that we've linked it from the WYSI documentation.
Yeah.
And that it's just an extension of the WYSI docs. In fact, I've been flaunting this thing around everywhere.
Yeah. Excellent. So
and we love that. Okay, great.
That's excellent. So you can see here that chapter one's really about authentication patterns, about whether you're going to do brokered, whether you're going to do direct, whether you're going to use X509. Up in the top, I almost kind of skipped over it a little bit, but in the introduction section, which is a perfect place to start, there are some scenarios so that you can read the scenarios and say, hey, that scenario sounds just like the solution I'm trying to build. Maybe I should start with those patterns that it's using.
And that's by far the best way to do it. Typically, yeah. When I go to a customer, I'll say, let's sit down, draw a few diagrams, talk about what you got, find the scenarios, and then pick the things out, the patterns that match what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's just one of the ways. I think it's probably one of the best ways as well. There's also a decision matrix you can use, then say, okay, I'm using this feature, I need this feature. You can go down and there's a problem solution index at the bottom. So I guess what I'm getting at is there's a bunch of different ways to figure out which patterns are most appropriate for your solution. And that's everything from authentication patterns. You can go down and see there's message protection patterns for doing things like confidentiality, data origin authentication. Then once you've made those decisions, you can decide whether you need to do transport or message layer security. I'm not going to go through this whole thing, but you get the idea that there's everything from the tokens you're going to use to how you're going to secure the messages to everything else.
Yeah, and so, typically, you'll probably almost certainly use more than one of these patterns.
Oh, absolutely.
Most of the time, you'll find that you'll use two or three. And what's so good about this guidance, it talks about how those combine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so this is now available today, right?
Absolutely. It's an RTM version. It's fully released.
And it's at msdn.microsoft.com/practices.
Yep.
And it's only $499.
It's $499.
I think. Yeah. Yep. Okay. No, okay. It's free. It's free. Go download it. It's free. All right. So today we're actually going to do several webcasts where we get very practical with this. But today we're going to be focusing on how you do the security with X509. And so, you know, for those who are not familiar with the X509 alphabet soup, who wants to tell me what's X509?
Well, X509, it's the best way of thinking about it is what's called the public key infrastructure. So let's think about this in this way. I want to make something secure for me to you, but I can't give my certificate out to everyone. I want to keep some sort of secret key for myself. So what X509 is, it's a mechanism by where I can have a key that I can sign all this information with myself, but hand out a public certificate to everyone else that they can decrypt information I send to them. So basically, it's a mechanism by which you can split a key which you could secure information with between your personal key that you keep and a private public one you publish to secure messages and any other form of data. It's used by SSL.
Okay, so if you give me a message that's signed with your X509 certificate, I can be certain it came from you and nobody else unless your key was compromised.
Correct, that's right.
Okay. So there's a little bit more here about how this works specifically. So let's talk through how does that work. Dwayne?
Well, one of the things, the powerful things that makes X509 work is that the certificate that you have that Mark was talking about is endorsed by a third party who's like a certificate authority. It's a trusted authority, mutually trusted by both parties in the communication. So, for example, if Mark gave me his certificate and it was signed by the issuer, by Mark's certificate issuer, and I trusted his issuer, then I could ensure the validity of the certificate and the integrity of it as well.
So if Don were the issuer.
Right.
And Don signs Mark's certificate and you go, I trust Don. I know Don. I don't know Mark, but I trust Don. Okay, so I'm going to trust this certificate.
Exactly.
Okay.
I don't have to have direct knowledge of Mark as long as we both trust the issuer of the certificate. More importantly, that I trust the issuer of the certificate as the relying party.
And I can be trusted.
Yeah,
I can be. I can
and
be.
So you're starting a new certificate authority right after the broadcast.
That's right.
Okay.
Veridon, right?
Yeah. Okay, so this can be used both to encrypt messages and to sign messages as well.
Yes,
correct.
Yep.
Okay. So, all right. So now WSI 3, a lot of people don't know what WSI is or what is that. So Mark, what is WSI?
So WSI, which is basically our friendly name for Web Service Enhancements, it's an add-on that we have that we've provide for Visual Studio. So when I walk up to Visual Studio today, I've got a rich environment for building web services through what we call ASP.NET Web Services. But all of those web services you build today just use text on the wire, not secure in any way. WSI walks up to Visual Studio 2005 and says, here's an add-on that provides you security for your web services. So it's primarily a security product for web services, plus it enables you to do a few other things like host ASP.NET Web Services in different environments, say outside of IIS, like in a Windows console application or inside a Windows service, for example. So primarily think of it as a security product for web services.
Okay, and is this something that comes out of the box with Visual Studio, or do I have to go download it?
Oh, no, you go off to MSDN, that grand source in the sky, and that's where you download it from.
Okay, good. So it's something I have to add on, but then once I've got it, I can do this wonderful stuff. Now, if I'm going to do this, I've got to make some decisions about, you know, there's lots of options with securing web services. So when am I going to use X509 certificates?
Well, a lot of the time, you kind of back up to another decision as to whether or not you may use direct or brokered authentication. And direct authentication is where a client directly presents their credentials to a relying party, like a web service, for verification against an identity store of some sort, like a username password scenario. Brokered authentication is where the client goes out and gets some sort of token for proof that that can be presented to a web service, and the web service can verify that, you know, from a mutually trusted party. And some of the decision points, X509 is one example of brokered authentication in a brokered authentication infrastructure. X509 is, you know, can be a choice. Again, there are a lot of other factors, but some of the key choices are, you know, like we said, when you have no direct trust established between the client and a web service. For example, as a web service, I can't maintain explicit knowledge of every single client that's going to communicate with me because there's just too many of them, or I just may not specifically know. But if I can trace them back to a trusted certificate issuer, for example, then I can validate certificate, verify signatures, and trust them through the issuer of the X509.
Okay, so if I wanted to put a web service out on the internet, let's say, and you know, I've got some kind of maybe a desktop client app that people can use. Maybe I'm a stock trading firm. And but I want to make sure those messages are confidential and that they're signed because I'm going to trade stock based on this message. But I might not want to have to distribute, I'm going to have so many clients, I need to have a way to authenticate them. So if I said, go off and get your certificate from this certificate authority, Dawn's certificate authority, because I trust Dawn, okay, then they could use these and send me messages and that would be okay.
Yes.
Okay, got it. All right.
Now, Dwayne brought up an interesting point, and he made a distinction between brokered authentication and direct authentication. And that's something that we've done in the guide that I mentioned earlier, and that simply by using X509, you're doing brokered. So I think it's clear in the guide now, but in earlier revisions of the guide, it wasn't really clear what was meant by brokered. So X509 and Kerberos are brokered technology. So as soon as you decide to use those, you have a brokered authentication thing because, like we've been talking about, you trust the chain or you trust the issuer not as much as the person that owns the certificate that you're using. So that's an important distinction with brokered authentication.
Well, and in direct authentication, there's no third party involved. And then I'm saying I have intimate knowledge of everybody who's on my system, and so it's like I'm going to have your username and password here and that sort of thing,
exactly.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the service could go back to a third party and verify a username and a password, but they're trusted to handle that secret, which sensitive in nature to prove the client's identity.
Yeah, okay. All right, so and I really think, though, that the certificates are much superior to things like usernames and passwords for authentication, right? I mean, it seems much better.
Yeah, totally. That's around the cryptographic key length, typically. I mean, trying to remember a password. Passwords are open to what's called dictionary attacks.
Yeah.
You get this dictionary full of words and ways of generating that particular password, and you can slam and slam, and eventually you'll get the number, you know, your dog's name.
Yeah. or the great one. So last night, a friend of mine goes, oh, my computer's all messed up, and can you help me out here, right? So this happens all the time to those of us who work for Microsoft. And so I go over there, and his son's account was somehow messed up, and I go, well, do you know his password? And he goes, oh, no, I don't. So I go, password. That was it. Yes.
Exactly. It's a paradox because strong passwords are generally not memorable, and memorable passwords are generally not very strong.
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we got some other decision points, though. If we wanted to do WS security to secure messages, we can't just do it with plain old ASP.NET web services because they don't support that, so we have to add WSI. And why would we want to use WSI 3.0? Mark?
Well, the benefits of WSI 3.0, one of the biggest benefits from earlier versions, say WSI 2.0, was that we encapsulated end-to-end scenarios much more. And what I mean by that is inside WSI 2.0, you had to think about how you're going to encrypt your request message and how you encrypt your response message. But inside WSI 3.0, we abstracted these higher into what we called turnkey security scenarios. These were things like username over certificate or mutual certificate. And simply by picking one of these built-in authentication mechanisms, that made it much, much easier to secure your end-to-end messaging rather than having to think about what the request requirements were and what the response requirements were. So we've raised the level of abstraction and made it much, much easier to build security into your web services.
And that's very similar to what Indigo, or Windows Communication Foundation, to use the proper name, has been doing in its most recent version.
In fact, that's identical. In fact, we work so closely that the names are similar and even APIs are similar. So when you start to use WSI 3.0 and you understand and build all of these projects and use these patterns and practices, everything you learn here today is directly translatable to WCF in terms of concepts. The only differences you'll find will be little changes in the API.
Okay, so if you need these things today, the only way you're going to get it today is with WSI. And really, WSI 3.0 is the easiest, best way to go. And it is supported.
Yeah, and in fact, even better still, what we do with WSI 3.0 is that we guarantee that if you deploy a web service with WSI 3.0, that will interoperate with Windows Communication Foundation when it's released.
Ah, terrific. Okay, so now you have some options for securing and you could secure at the message layer or the transport layer, right? So if I say I'm doing HTTPS with somebody, I'm securing at a transport layer. But how is message layer security different?
Well, message layer security is different in that the means of securing it is not dependent upon the platform or not built into the platform. For example, you mentioned SSL. The actual negotiation of an SSL session happens underneath, and it's completely transparent to the application. To some extent, message layer security can be transparent to client service, but it's happening at the message layer and not underneath. And what that does is it gives you a little more granularity of control over security, as well as, depending upon how your messages flow through intermediaries, it gives you more flexibility and options. For example, in an SSL interaction, if you have an intermediary that needs to do something to a message, like it needs to verify the integrity of the message, or it needs to route something dynamically, and it relies on content that's normally encrypted, you really don't have a lot of options with SSL except to establish a session between the intermediary and the client and then re-encrypt it and send it back to the endpoint. Whereas with message layer security, if you have those kinds of requirements, you have more options. For example, with an intermediary sitting there, you could verify message signature or decrypt a part of the message and look at it and route it on to an endpoint.
And so that's like a very important point because with SSL, everything is encrypted, but it's possible to have parts of the message encrypted for different parties or different purposes, right, with this. So, yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting scenario.
Also, using message layer security allows you to keep hidden certain things from the intermediary. If you don't completely trust the intermediary, then you can like you said, Ron, only encrypt certain parts of the message, keeping the rest of it hidden from the intermediary. Not possible with transport layer security.
Right. I am going to play the devil's advocate here, though, for transport security, and that is one of the trade-offs that you have when going to message level security is you have reduced performance.
Yes,
compared
that's true.
To transport level security. So you have to be aware of that.
Especially with the hardware accelerators that are available in SSL.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So we have some objectives for the solution. So, guys, tell me about this. These are the objectives for what we're going to go through today?
Yeah. Basically, what we did was we looked at scenarios as problems, as things that, problems that people need to solve within a real-world scenario using X509 at the message layer. We looked at it in terms of security features, capabilities. We wanted to, based on a threat assessment or on requirements analysis, we have this list of features that we need to implement. And some of the key ones that we addressed in this implementation were mutual authentication, meaning that both the client and the service are able to recognize each other and verify an identity, whether it's directly through the certificates or through the broker as an issuer of trusted issuer of the certificates. The second thing the second objective we wanted to accomplish was to provide data confidentiality to prevent eavesdropping on the wire of sensitive data being passed back and forth between the client and the service. The third one was data origin authenticity. And this term is probably not as mainstream as mutual authentication, data confidentiality. But what we tried to identify with this term and what we meant by it was two things. Number one was that you have integrity around the data so that you can ensure that it was intact from the time that it was signed and sent by the client to the time it was received and verified by the service, so that anyone in the middle who attempted to manipulate data or change anything maliciously would blow the integrity of the message.
You know, I have to say, when I first read the drafts of the early drafts of this, you guys kept putting DOA for the for this one. And I went, DOA, what is that? Dead on arrival, man. What are you talking about? Okay, but data origin authenticity, that's a good one. Okay, so this is the objective. So I can imagine, you know, maybe a couple of businesses want to exchange messages. They're partnering on some project or something, and they want to exchange messages, so they would need to do these things. So what's the strategy for making this work with WYSI 3?
Well, there are a few strategies. The primary one we identified was using the Mutual Certificate 1.0 Security Turnkey Assertion. And the name we identified...
Okay, hold on. A turnkey policy assertion is what, Mark?
So this is, as I described a little bit earlier, this is the concrete example of one of those higher-level abstract end-to-end message security scenarios. So in this case, Mutual Certificate 1.0 Security is an example whereby I will authenticate a message going both ways from a client to a service, or, you know, between two businesses, as you described earlier, using certificates. And this is the high-level name description that you can use. And simply by picking this up, you basically have an end-to-end scenario that you can use.
Okay, simplifies it. Okay, go ahead, Dwayne.
Well, the Mutual Certificate 1.0 Security is the name of the assertion as you would see it within a policy file. It would be enclosed in square brackets like an XML element.
Okay.
So, but as Mark said, it encapsulates functionality. So using this turnkey assertion, we're able to sign messages and we're able to encrypt them. And we have some options there. One of the assumptions with this approach is that the client and the service already have exchanged their X509 certificates out of band.
Okay, now, so what does that mean?
Well, what that means is that unlike SSL, where SSL, a client can go out and get a service's certificate when it attempts to communicate at that time, in this scenario, the client actually has to have the service's certificate installed into their certificate store before. They can't just go get it on the fly.
All right. And so what, they're going to email it? They're going to mail a CD? Or
however they want to do it. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. All right. So they're going to send a certificate. So both of them have the other certificate in advance, and they're ready to go. Okay.
All right. So one thing before we leave this slide. Dwayne said one thing. He said this mutual certificate 1.0 security thing. It's in the policy file. That's true. He actually said square brackets accidentally. He meant angle brackets. So I didn't want anyone to think this was a C# attribute. It's actually in the policy files.
It's done. I'm geometrically challenged. Yeah. So.
And we should just describe what a policy is. A policy is just a declarative way of specifying your security requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we like to do is this. We like to say you can write an application, but you're not forced to build a security into your app there and then. There's a declarative way of doing this. So my app may move from the intranet to the internet, and all I have to do is change the policy file associated with it.
Yeah, no recompiling.
Okay, yes. So you have an alternate strategy, though, and what's that about?
Well, the alternate strategy was about using another turnkey assertion. The other one was Mutual Certificate 1.0, and this one is Mutual Certificate 1.1. Very subtle difference in the name. However, if one of your requirements is interoperability, it makes a very big difference. The Mutual Certificate 1.0 security turnkey assertion, it supports WS Security 1.0 out of the box, whereas the Mutual 1.1 is WS Security 1.1.
Okay, so if the other guy says, oh, I can't do 1.1, then you're going to have to do the 1.0.
Right, and there's some trade-offs associated with that, mainly around performance. And, you know, again, it's a trade-off between performance and compatibility, because the WS Security 1.1 provides some extra features and things that allow you to reduce some of the more resource-intensive operations normally associated with this.
Okay, and Mark, we have a user question real quick. Is WYSI 3.0 in the recommendation stage, or is it released?
Oh, WYSI 3.0 is a product that was released on the 7th of November, and you can download from MSDN now.
All right, good. Okay, just wanted to make sure. And the URL for WYSI 3 download, Don't we have that on the slide?
It's actually on a couple of slides. It was a couple of slides ago, like, I don't know, 8 or 7 or something like that.
If you just go to msdn.com/webservices, you'll find a link from there.
Yep.
Love it. Okay. All right. So let's move on. So here's the process. How does this work then actually once we're going to do this?
Well, this is just kind of a very high-level description of how it works. So basically, the first thing the client does is initialize and sends a request message. And part of that process is, okay, I know the web service I want to talk to. I know based on my policy assertion I've defined, I know what the service's certificate is. I specify the policy I want to use in my client. I bind the policy to my communication with the web service. And once WYSI goes through, I should say I, meaning the client, but what actually happens, the client isn't really actively doing this. This is WYSI on the client doing a lot of this for you. So the client isn't explicitly doing any of this. But what the policy assertion does is it goes out and it gets the certificate for the service. It gets the client's certificate. And what it'll do is it'll attach the client's certificate to the message and then it'll sign it with the client's private key. And after that, it'll encrypt the message with the service's public key from the X509 certificate and fire it off to the service.
So it's actually sending the client's certificate along with the message?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right. Because you said earlier they had to exchange these in advance, so I was just curious why it does that. Or why did they have to have it in advance?
Well, so in this case, the reason why the client certificate is sent ahead is because the server will – doesn't necessarily have to have the client certificate all the time because it could be sent as part of the message so it can validate, authenticate the message when it gets received.
Yeah. Okay. Just the public part of the certificate, not the private part.
Okay. Obviously. So going back to my, Ron stock trading scenario, if I gave some people a CD and said, here's my stock trading app, on my app I could have my server certificate, my public one, right? And then during the installation process, I could install that in their cert store so they'd all be set to go. Now, my server doesn't know anything about their certificate yet, but when they send their first message to me, I get it.
Yes.
Okay, and then I'm good to go.
Well, again, assuming that you can verify their certificate up to a trusted issuer.
Okay, so if it comes from Don, I'm good to go. All right. So secondly, then on the service side, something happens here. The message comes in, and then what?
Right. On the receiving end, the message that was secured in the first part of the process, the service validates the client certificate. And some of the things that it does to do that, it verifies the internal consistency of the certificate. It looks at the issuer's signature, since the issuer, in our case Don, has signed the certificate to ensure that the certificate has not been tampered with. So very much like verifying a message through the message signature, the certificate is verified through the certificate signature to make sure that no one had tampered with it. And also, this helps the service to identify the certificate issuer and verify the client certificate up the trust chain, which is the next step. After that, once the –
Do we actually go out and talk to the certificate authority and say, like, here's a certificate. Is this real? Or is that just like implied that we do that?
No. So what you have on your machine, you have installed on your machine typically what's called a certificate root authority.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is you start to go up your chain of certificate chain. Because one certificate could be generated and signed by another certificate, which in turn is generated by another certificate.
Okay.
And in the end, you hit what's called the certificate root authority. So for example, on your machine, you have a root authority from VeriSign.
Yeah.
And VeriSign's a root authority. They are allowed to issue certificates. If you have a certificate that's from a VeriSign as the issuer, eventually you'll hit this root authority certificate, which will validate it.
Okay.
And those root authority certificates have been endorsed in advance to be on your machine, either because you've bought the operating system and they're on there, or because you have put them on there yourself.
Okay. So that's a second step. We're not actually going out and making a call to some other server out in the world somewhere to say, is that a valid certificate? It's just we're walking the chain of authority right on up to the root.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. Oh, I'm so sorry. But we're out of time for this edition of ArtCast. But hey, X509 certificates are really interesting, aren't they? I had no idea about all this root certificate authority jazz and certificate revocation list. There's so much to learn. And in fact, there's even more because we have the second half of the Web Services Security Patterns ArtCast coming up on the next episode. So stay tuned. After this announcement, we'll have some preview of that episode. But before that, let me just say, that I'm really enjoying hearing from so many of you. So would you take a moment, send me a note and tell me what you think about ArcCast. Send your note to ron.jacobs@microsoft.com and tell me, maybe we can convince my boss to give me a raise. Aha! Just kidding, just kidding. Oh, no, send those cards and letters anyway. Here to ArcCast.
Next time on ArcCast, Dwayne Taylor.
Mark, correct me if I'm wrong here. I don't think Wizzy really does anything.
Mark Fussell.
You have a trade-off there in the sense of, you know, you'll make your...
Ron Jacobs.
Right, so, yeah, you got a good point there.
Don Smith.
I think there's a link in the deck somewhere,